Let's be real. Getting dinner on the table that's fast, healthy, and doesn't taste like cardboard, that's basically the Olympics of adulting. My shortcut, frozen Washington red raspberries. These bright little flavor bombs are picked at peak ripeness and frozen within hours by passionate family farmers in Washington State. So you get that fresh, sweet, tart taste all year long, like summer snuck into your freezer and stayed for dessert. Toss them in smoothies, stir them into oatmeal, or even fake a fancy dessert with yogurt and a drizzle of honey. They have no added sugar, no preservatives, just the good stuff. Plus, I get to feel like a hero for supporting local American family farms without actually milking a cow or planting anything. You can find them at Costco, Kroger, Meijer, and Winco Foods. Just check for the product of the U.S. on the bag. And keep an eye out for them in Kirkland's 3-Berry Blend, Smucker's Jam, or the dangerous True Fruit chocolate-covered raspberries. You've been warned. Frozen Washington red raspberries. Flavor, convenience, and a tiny boost of patriotic pride. Now that's a win-win. Remember when I talked about True Diagnostics True Age test? Well, I took it myself and the results are in. I found out my biological age, which directly predicts my risk for serious diseases. Here's why that matters. Research shows that if your biological age is even just 5 years older than your actual age, your risk of developing diseases like cancer or heart disease can jump by as much as 30 to 50%. The good news is, nearly 90% of biological aging is in your hand. Yes, it's driven by things like your lifestyle, which means you have a lot of control over it. I was pleased to see my biological age was 6 years younger than my chronological age. That felt like a big win because I've definitely put a lot of time and attention on improving my lifestyle habits so they are more aligned with my health goals. The test also showed a few areas to work on and even pointed out a low level of riboflavin or vitamin B2, which plays a huge role in energy metabolism. It's strange because I felt there was something inhibiting my energy, and now I have a simple theory I can test. The True Age test didn't just give me a number, it showed how quickly my heart, brain, liver, and immune system are aging. The test itself was super easy and convenient. I did it from home, no doctor visit or big needles, just a quick, painless finger prick. You send off that tiny sample in a prepaid package, and in about 2 to 3 weeks, you'll get a detailed online report. If you care about protecting your health and want to find out what your real age is, head over to TrueDiagnostic.com and use my code MINDFUL to get 20% off your entire order or subscription. That's TrueDiagnostic.com and use code MINDFUL at checkout to get 20% off. Your future self will thank you.
When you look at injections versus a topical, injection has a downtime. Downtime is what they say 2, 3, 4 weeks from the recovery, because you created a secondary injury on top of your primary injury. So you have to recover from that.
You mean just the act of sticking needles in there?
Yes. So then when you do the topical, now there's no kind of invasive point there, right? Now you're just looking at just continuing just to apply the regenerative topical regen on there and then do your normal activity, and it's going to speed up the healing process while it doesn't interrupt your activity.
Dr. Tommy Reed, thanks for joining me on the podcast.
Hey, appreciate that, Les. Thank you for inviting me on here, man. I'm looking forward to this.
So I've been putting some stem cell stuff on an injury I have for the last few weeks. It's been an interesting experience. I want to thank you for sending me a sample to give it a try. I'm very curious of what's going on with stem cells. Being like aware of the topics in the health and wellness sphere for the last 10 or 20 years, I've seen stem cells talked about here and there, but I've never really done a deep dive. I've never tried them prior to now. I remember originally hearing them. There was like some controversy around them. So I'm looking to get a little bit of the stem cell 101 from you today. But first of all, I'd like to know, like, what even brought you to this? Because it sounds like you have a background in chiropractic and physical therapy. Is that correct?
Yeah, chiropractic, yes. So I started off as a sports chiropractor, worked at UCLA, and this is back in 2004 or 5. So when you're working with those top elite athletes, you know, they go through the collegiate world, they go into their national championship, and then they get picked up by a pro or an Olympic level. Well, their carrot goes a little higher and higher, right? So then when you go to the pro level and they get endorsed by like a Nike or Adidas, well, they have their own physio department and they're sort of like their own medical aspect of their care. So as you're part of that team, you start integrating with their kind of therapy and you start hearing about the first wave. So back then, the biggest wave was in the regenerative medicine world, were a thing called prototherapy. So prototherapy is basically like they inject you, let's say you have a sprained hamstring. So you want to speed up the healing process. So the thought process is that if they can introduce some type of antigen that's not too invasive, it'll kind of engage that, autoimmune system, and it'll start creating a scar tissue or a healing factor faster, right? So they would shoot this thing called dextrose or like a sugar water in there, and then that was a whole prototherapy world. And then that evolved into, you know, these athletes going into more aggressive type of materials, of going into pretty much like they were getting involved with like, there's a place down in Mexico I heard guys were using formaldehyde, just to really get that aggressive type of an antigen sensation so the body attacks it faster.
So they're actually putting an insult into the body to stimulate an immunological response.
Yeah, so that was a theory back then. And then, you know, so I don't know if it's like a psychosomatic or is it, did it really have some like really like physiology kind of effects to it, but you can see that it started evolving into something getting really aggressive. Then what popped up was PRP. So we know about PRP, right? Platelet-rich plasma, right? So then, you know, you take your own blood and then you put it into a centrifuge and you cycle through and you pull out the actual plasma and you re-inject it because it has those growth factors into that damaged tissue. So then I started seeing that evolved in that. So, you know, my athletes go into that stuff. Then all of a sudden you get into the world of stem cells, what they call the mesenchymal stem cells. But during that period, it was basically from your own adipose, your own fat tissue, or your bone marrow. Now, to get that out, it's pretty aggressive, like a liposuction for the fat. But the bone marrow, they have to use this T-bar, and they kind of just crank your two locations. It used to be in your tibial bone, your shin, or the hip bone, your ilium. And they used to just drive it in there, and they would penetrate through the cortex of the bone, take a syringe, draw out the bone marrow, and then put in a centrifuge, spin it around, extract the mesenchymal stem cells.
Wait, I'm sorry. Tommy, you're saying they would drill a hole into the middle of your hip bone or your lower leg bone?
Yeah. In fact, they still do that now. It's very invasive, yeah. And so they take, and once they create the hole, they put a syringe through there, and they extract out the actual the bone marrow. Again, they put it to a centrifuge. They do a couple cycles of that. They pull out the mesenchymal stem cells, and then they inject that damaged area with those mesenchymal stem cells.
Can you elaborate that word, what that is, what you're referring to? Am I saying this right? Mesenchymal?
Yeah, it's pronounced so many ways, but the way I pronounce it, mesenchymal stem cells, or MSC. You know, that's the generic acronyms for that.
Okay.
So you have it where it comes out of your own tissue. So then it evolved into where it's...
Wait, is that what that word refers to? The fact that it comes from your own tissue?
No. No, mesenchymal stem cell is just a generic terminology for that type of stem cell.
Okay.
Then, so that's a donor site of your own adipose tissue or your bone marrow. Then the third site where it evolved into where it comes from, the umbilical cord. That's where that's the majority of the trends moving towards, because it's a very young and vibrant tissue. So the umbilical cord has a thing called the Wharton's jelly. The Wharton's jelly has the highest concentration of that mesenchymal stem cells. The neat thing about that, since it's a fast-growing tissue, it's very young and vibrant. That's why everybody wants to achieve that type of donor tissue. So again, they take it during the C-section delivery, and then, of course, they vet the patient, the mother, during C-section delivery.
These are only during C-sections?
It's not through the other canal birth. But
why? What's the difference there? If the donor wants to donate, what does it matter?
I think the big thing is that when you go through like a canal birth, mm-hmm. there's a lot of trauma going involved there. So as you bring in the tissue through the channel, you kind of damage some of the tissue in a non-appropriate way, and there are possibly some chemicals involved, and there's a lot of things involved with that type of delivery versus a C-section where you just open up the abdominal area and you just extract out the...
So this is something that the birthing mother agrees to. Is there... Yeah. Why do they do that? Like, is that just for the good of humanity to donate it, or are they getting compensated for that?
Yeah, yeah.
Or?
So typically you'll hear mothers that ask about banking their cord. You know, they'll take a, you know, they want to bank their cord to, for their baby for future uses, right? So during that process, they'll ask, would you like to also donate some of that tissue? And then maybe there's a discount. There's all variables that can
be. Time out. I didn't know that that's a thing. So you're saying that it's common that women just bank the umbilical cord for future use for themselves or their child?
For the child, yeah. So they feel that that tissue, that mesenchymal stem cell at the future medical, you know, evolution will discover, hey, you can take your own tissue from that, you know, Morton's jelly, and then maybe harvest another, maybe a limb or something
no
that you're
way.
Doing.
A limb.
So that's what they're predicting in the future. So that's why they want to bank it. So that, there's a whole industry of that, you know?
Oh, that's insane.
Oh, yeah. So during that process, they'll ask to donate partial tissue for maybe a discount. And then during that time, they'll ask the questions. And then they'll go ahead and, you know, do the serology, make sure they have no pathology. And then, you know, vet the patient with any type of, like, you know, like family history. And then once they clear all the checks, then we go ahead and utilize that tissue. So we have a lab.
So do those have their that person's DNA then in those MSC cells?
Okay, so that's interesting about that question. So there's DNA components in there, but when you look at mesenchymal stem cells, it's not so much. So this is how confusing and the ambiguity starts happening with the stem cell world. So stem cell is a very interesting world. Everybody knows about stem cell in a generic way, right? Stem cell helps regenerate tissue. There's always a process of learning how to, like, take an existing tissue and how's it go and multiply and make other stem cells. So they always create this word stem cell. It's a generic term. Well, stem cell is just a base. It's just all of this is a base template, and then you're just going to replicate yourself, right? So you need a thing in our body, which is adult stem cells. Our adult stem cells has that DNA. It's, say, you're going to turn into a tendon. You're going to turn into a cartilage. So each stem cell is geared towards that tissue. So when you hear the word stem cell and we're going to shoot it into your tissue, people think that that stem cell, what they call, so there's a terminology, is a potency. They say it's got a potency to turn into something. So there's a thing called a totipotent, which is the ultimate thing that's going to turn into everything, or there's going to be a multipotent or a pluripotent, a unipotent. So it's going to turn into something, right? So the one
is that known ahead of time? Based on some signature of that cell?
Well, here's the thing. So that's the theory right now. So the theory is that all they know right now is stem cell works. The mesenchymal stem cell therapy works. It's the defining of what it really does is the ambiguity. So a group of people think that these cells, these mesenchymal stem cells, when you inject it into the damaged tissue or just, you know, somehow, you know, absorb it into your body, that stem cell, which is a basic, you know, like a cell, it's got a nucleus, it's got its membrane, and it's got a signals in there. It's going to somehow, like you said, it's going to mutate into that particular tissue and replicate that DNA and then turn into it. As you know, DNA and chromosome, there's so many codons, right? ATCG, right? There's a million codes out there it can turn anything into. So to believe that that particular mesenchymal stem cell that came from the umbilical cord is going to turn into your donor tissue, I mean, into this target tissue, impossible. So what it really does...
It's not affected by its environment? Like, if you put it in a liver, it doesn't turn into a liver cell because of its environment?
So that's a theory, too. So there's theories there. Now, the other theory is that this is what I believe in. It's not so much that this stem cell is turning into that tissue. What it does is signals. It signals your existing stem cells to wake up and turn on, and then you go ahead and replicate. That's the only logical thing that has to happen here. Because if you look at everything out there as far as signalers, every adult stem cells have signals. Signals to turn on to generate. So there are things that you go through in an adult stem cell called, like, mitosis, right? You know, cell division, chromosomes, right? So when you cell divide, it turns into other type of stem cells, right? You're multiplying stem cells. But in that stem cell will secrete other types of, like, tissue that you are trying to generate. For instance, a satellite cell. A satellite cell is the stem cells for muscle. So if you don't have that satellite cell, the muscle won't replicate. It just sits there and dormates. So you've got to either turn on that stem cell, signal to turn on, or you may have another problem, which is called senescence. It's a zombie cell. So as we age, the chromosomes, as you replicate, so a cell like cell will replicate, go through mitosis. So when it goes mitosis, cell divides. Well, we only have so many times where RNA turns into DNA and replicates and daughter cells occur through mitosis. You only get so many of those things, and it's called Hayflick limit. A Hayflick limit tells you that a chromosome has so many turns, and then at that point, it goes into a thing called senescence. And the safety mechanism that holds that chromosome for cell division is the safety mechanism called telomeres. Now, we all know what telomeres are. It's the end caps of the chromosomes. So once the zombie cells or the senescent cells go into that state, it's just dormant. That's where you see damaged tissue. As we age, trauma, environmental.
It's dormant. It doesn't just like self-destruct and...
It doesn't sell. It doesn't go away. It's called apoptosis. It doesn't go into that yet. It eventually go there, but it's just sitting there dormant because it's still. It's. I mean, the satellite cell is still there. The other cells are still there, but when you damage the tissue, it's just sitting there. It doesn't know what to do because it's not allowed to replicate right now. So you first need to do is something to increase the telomeres back to its normal length. Well, in Wharton's jelly, in the umbilical cord and mesenchymal stem cell, there is an enzyme that increases those telomeres called telomerase. Telomerase increases the telomeres.
Why can't we just eat that enzyme?
Well, that's the tough thing is that enzyme, just because of where it's at, you look at like for instance, like if you take telomerase, right, and you take it to an enzyme, you might have to think about the gastric acid in your stomach. So that is going to denature that real quick. So that's why you want to bypass that and take it to either a, you know, like the way Regen works on a topical aspect of it or an IV, or you can do it inhaling it.
So you can do that, though, with the telomerase?
But telomerase, there's so many forms of telomerase. You want the human tissue form of it, you know. There's good studies coming out about plant-based telomerase right now. There's really interesting things about increasing your own telomerase to increase in its growth.
And I could just see somebody ODing on that and growing like leaf structures out of their shoulders or something.
But yeah, so interesting, yeah. So
like what could possibly go wrong?
So yeah. So the thing with telomerase is that why it's very pronounced is that, so the PhD guy, the girl that was out in Berkeley, Elizabeth Blackburn, she was the one to discover this enzyme with a thing called pond scum. She saw that these things would never die off, and that's how she discovered this enzyme. So with that, she started thinking, like, oh, where else do you see this enzyme? So we see it pronounced in a lot of growth areas. For instance, like fetal tissue, the placenta, umbilical cord, things that have to grow real fast. On the other side of that coin, you're going to see a lot of that in tumor cells, cancer cells metastasize faster. When you see that, you're going to see a lot of that enzyme there. So that there's got to be
some risk involved. I have a question. Can we back up? So I posed a question that, and I think I've heard this, that a cell will, I don't know what the word is, but it'll likely be affected by its environment. So if you put a cell in a kidney relative to a liver, like it, the environmental information will kind of tell it to become part of that. But you're saying it's more of a signal thing, that it's awakening your own stem cells that are already there, not your own, not producing new stem cells. It's not stimulating you to produce new ones. It's just waking up ones that are already there. So yeah. This is my question. Uh-huh. What is that? What is the form of that signal? Is that a measurable thing? Like, is that a neurological thing? Is it just unseen, unmeasurable, like waves of information? Like, what is the signal?
Yeah, so there is an ability to, so there's a signaling, especially like when it comes to like for instance, like when you look at mesenchymal stem cells, and they have you probably heard this word too, it goes exosomes. Exosomes is it's an acellular type of cell, meaning that it has no nucleus. It carries that type of signal molecules in there. So when it gets near another tissue, it signals those, either the growth factors, cytokines, proteins. It will signal that target tissue with the signaling. It's called paracrine effect. When the paracrine effect, when it goes cell to cell, it signals. Now, when you go back to the other
tissue. So wait, there's no nucleus. Does that mean there's no DNA because the DNA is in the nucleus?
There's no real DNA. There's a microRNA in there. There's little script taste in there, but just a little bit of that stuff. It's just little information. It doesn't have the whole type of chromosome in there. So when you look at like a typical cell has, you know, all that cell membrane and nucleus, the DNA and RNA and all that stuff in there. So when you look at like little of these, what they call like, when you look at the mesenchymal stem cells, now they have their they have their nucleus in there. But what we're looking for are the signalers. The signalers are what they call the EVs, extracellular vesicles. Those are what we're targeting. That's what's the real importance of this whole stem cell world is.
And those are things that are seen in a microscope or?
Oh, yeah, you can see them. I mean, you probably have to look at a super powerful microscope. But yeah, you can see them. They're probably almost 20 to 200 micrometers.
These are communication apparatuses from cell to cell.
Yeah, so let's say a mesenchymal stem cell, right? So again, one says, this group says, no, it's going to mutate into your target tissue, which I don't believe. The other side, where I'm at, it takes a mesenchymal cell, it secretes those EVs, those signalers that has those little acellular type of cells, and then they go into a target tissue and they do the paracrine effect, which is signals your existing tissue, turn on, wake up. So, but going back into what you're looking at, so you look at the target tissue. The target tissue has, let's say you look at a 50-year-old male that has tennis elbow. The tennis elbow is basically a tendinopathy of the wrist extensors, right? So what happens there is that you've gone into a point, you're either overusing it or you traumatize it or something, but it doesn't have the ability to heal. It's either because it's decreased its own what they call tenocytes. That's the adult stem cell in there. Tenocytes makes more tendon tissue. So it's like a step process, right? So if you don't have no tenocytes and activity, then you're going to have no type of a tendon tissue, right? But here's the thing. So there's tenocytes within our tenons that actually elongate and then make more of these tendon tissues or cartilage, right? Tendons. So what happens is that when you have these tenocytes sitting there and they start, as you age, they start decreasing. Let's say there's five in that one particular brand. Well, as you age, they start dropping down, senescence. So now you have two left. Well, if you give yourself enough time to heal, let's say you immobilize your elbow and your wrist for 6 months, it would heal. The elbow, the tendonitis will heal. It's just that who has the ability to immobilize something that long to get that ability for those two little tenocytes to heal all that? So what you want to do is regain those other three to power back up. So now you have that normal healing cycle as if you're 20 years old. So with that, you have to think, all right, it's gone to senescence. I need to increase the telomeres by increasing or adding in there a telomerase. Telomerase goes there, increases the actual chromosome. Now it's activated. Now you need signals to turn that thing on, which could be like transferring growth factor beta, or it could be interleukin 10. It can be all kinds of neat things that turn on that particular tenocyte to now say, all right, turn on. Now let's go make some more tenons. And then now it creates.
So in that scenario, 50-some-year-old guy, tennis elbow, would heal in 6 months if he did nothing else. What kind of delta is there if you add a stem cell product, whether it's your topical or injection or something? What do they do for the average person in that scenario?
Okay, so you got the 6 month guy that immobilizes versus the topical stem cell, right? But the topical stem cell, you're thinking about that this guy is a 50-year-old guy. He wants to be active. He wants to still continue play, but he wants to heal fast. He wants to get that elbow back to his 20-year-old self to heal fast and regain his activity. So you're looking at starting that process of regenerating that tissue without, getting in the way of his activity, you know? So right. It would speed up the healing process, and more importantly, it would not cease his ability to do his activities. So if that's the big thing that people have to understand, is that when you look at injections versus a topical, injection has a downtime. Downtime is what they say 2, 3, 4 weeks from the recovery, because you created a secondary injury on top of your primary injury. So you have to recover from that.
You mean just the act of sticking needles in there?
Yes. So then when you do the topical, now there's no kind of invasive point there, right? Now you're just looking at just continuing just to apply the regenerative topical regen on there and then do your normal activity, and it's going to speed up the healing process while it doesn't interrupt your activity. Gotcha. Because think about it. When you look at a tennis elbow, just use your mouse, just to lift up your little finger, you're engaging that tendon. You're constantly using it. So the how can you shut it down? You have to almost like you have to immobilize your fingers, your wrist, elbows, and then you can shut it down and give it a chance to rest. Well, you have to speed something up. Either speed up the healing process, right? So the only way to do it, introduce that actual components of those EVs and that actual telomerase into that topical regenerative medicine.
So you were using these for your athletes and such through injections, and then you created a topical product?
Yeah, so this is a good story here. So I, you know, during my process, that was the biggest complaint, is like during the season, these guys can't do these injections because during the season, they have to constantly play. You know, sports is kind of weird, you know, especially in the NFL. NFL is all about on-the-field time, you know. They don't care about practice. And all that. When you're on the field, that's where your contract is being, like, honored, right? If you don't show up on the field, you kind of look upon either, unless you have some type of safety net, you're okay for that agreement term, right? But if you have to negotiate your next term, they can use that against you. So every athlete does not want to show up there with any type of delayed on the field or something, right? So they get an injury, and the protocol typically is basically, you know, pain meds, shut the nervous system down so you don't feel the pain, and go through the actual injury and play in the last season. So their complaint was they can't do regenerative medicine because if they do regenerative medicine injectables during the season, they would have to shut themselves down for 2 weeks, 3 weeks. So after hearing this a couple of times back in 2010, 11, so I was with the Bucks between 2015 and 2018, you know, as a chiropractor there. So I did like the chiropractic and advanced therapy there. So I would get the very unique cases and I would work with them. And then I would hear their cases and I would hear it because I wish I could do this and that. So it planted seeds in my head to say, hey, you know, this is something that's kind of like a void in this world of regenerative medicine. So once you know, I started like looking into it and I started seeing how this can apply and how do I get this delivery mechanism from injectable into a topical, I started going down that rabbit hole, looking for the actual, you know, the vehicle. And then you come to find out the vehicle is a simple one that's already on the FDA world is DMSO. DMSO is a great agent that actually takes that topical, you know, those EVs, those biomolecules, and it transdermally pulls it right through into the deep tissue. So then we started playing around with that. So as I'm trying to develop that back in 2021, 22, and we started getting a little more advanced, then I
so
had...
DMSO is the carrier.
The carrier. It's a transporter. It actually takes... What it does is kind of it interrupts that the lipid bilayer of that the stratum on that thick layer of your skin. It breaks it open and it allows things to penetrate through.
So it breaks it?
Yeah.
It breaks your skin?
Well, it doesn't break it. What it does is it disrupts that lipid bilayer in your skin and it opens up the pores a little more so it pulls things in there.
That's like a sulfur source, isn't it? Or
yeah. Uh-huh.
And I think I've seen people using that as its own thing for anti-inflammatory stuff.
They have a lot of the homeopathic. I mean, right now the FDA has control of that because it's classified as a drug. Because
oh, really?
Yeah, it's high concentration. I think they have it a condition called intestitis. I think it is. I don't think it's prostatitis, but it's utilized for one of those conditions. So. And then
so they labeled it a drug so a person can't just get that?
Well, I mean, you can get it. There's companies out there that don't claim for any type of medical purpose. They just say,
gotcha.
Here's DMSO, solve it, and then just leave it alone. You can get it. So, so once I understood about that mechanism, then, you know, I started playing around with it. Well, during that time, I had, you know, I'm treating, you know, college professional football players, and I had this one emergency quarterback that was playing for a team. I can't say his name, but he was having a bad problem. He was going into camp, and the season starts, and he had real bad Achilles tendonitis, real bad. So he was concerned that it was going to rupture. Now, he was on his last year of his contract, and he doesn't want to go into the training room or the medical facility because once you go in there in your last year, they can use that against you when they want to negotiate or figure out how to, you know, treat you for the next contract. So that was his biggest concern. So I said, well, I've got something here. Let's work together and see how it works. So then once I talked to him about this stuff, then he took it onto his world, into the NFL world, and then he helped me develop it. He just called me back, turn it up, turn it down, turn it this way, turn it that way. He helped me get the actual, like, the components of it tuned up, where then he said, okay, it's perfect the way it feels, continue on. And then after that, he survived the whole season without, you know, any Achilles tendonitis rupture or anything like that. So the good thing about that is that he gave me the best proof of it in extreme sport, how great this product is. So I said, great. So then I said, hey, this thing works for an NFL guy during an extreme sport. Then I know I can backtrack and do it in the civilian world to just the classically, like, the arthritic patients, or just the weekend warriors, or even the aged person, you know? So I'm like, this is great. So then we started doing other things. We did like an 80-person study with just on low back and osteoarthritis. And with those, we did 4 sets of tests for 20 in each group. And we did a VAS score, which is visual analog score. And we basically say, how's your low back feel, you know, before this? And then they score 0 out of 10. And then they do that whole 1 month application, and they said, well, how's your back feel now? And then we had an average of 51% decrease in pain. So that was very
just in 1 month of daily topical.
Daily, perfect, yep.
And so then, what else, can I ask you a little bit about the product more?
Yeah.
So DMSO is the main carrier, and then you put MSCs in it, and the DMSO brings those MSCs through the skin, so it's closer to the joint or whatever.
Yeah.
Is there any other stuff in there that's relevant for the process?
For the transdermal component? No.
Just for, like, the healing process. Like, is it
Is there any other
magic stuff in the potion or whatever?
Yeah. So there's we have a 2-bottle kit, right? There's a bottle which is called the Alpha, the morning or before activity. And there's an Omega, which is the evening before you sleep or after. So the Omega has an ingredient called capsaicin. Capsaicin has a thermogenic effect. It gives you that heat feeling, right?
So that's like what's in peppers, right? Spicy peppers?
Yes, but so that gives you the thermogenic effect. So that does 2 things, right? It has its purposes for, like, anti-inflammatory, engaging, activation of cellular function. And it really gives you a biofeedback. Okay, it's getting in there and you feel it. I mean, you really feel it. The interesting thing is that regen, because of the penetration, this lasts, if you apply it on your, let's say, your low back, and then you don't use the Omega that evening, and then you go the next day and work out without the second application of the Alpha, you'll feel the Alpha again because it's such a deep saturation. It's so far into your dermis that you're like, wow, I can feel that thermogenic effect because it lasts that long.
Like, you'll feel actual heat.
The heat, yeah. So that means you heal it because it's so deep into the actual, like, dermis that you know that with that is going to be your EVs. So when you think about mesenchymal stem cells, so what's in regen is not so much the mesenchymal stem cell. It's the EVs that are secreted from the mesenchymal stem cells, and that's the signalers. We want to get the signals, the information that turns on your existing tissue. So that's what's really important, not so much the actual mesenchymal cells. So mesenchymal cells are what people want to think, like, when they say, how many cell count do you have? Are they live? We don't care about that because that has no importance to us.
You don't think that's the mechanism.
Well, no. It's the primary, but the byproduct is what we want. The byproduct, the signals.
The same thing as the exosomes. Are exosomes and EVs the same thing?
Yes, yeah. EVs is generic. Every cell sends out an EV. It's just that we look at EV as from the mesenchymal stem cell is what we want. So the mesenchymal stem cell is just a, like, stem cell is a generic. We don't like to confuse our patients, but what we really want are, like, the signalers of the mesenchymal stem cells that secretes the EVs, that signals things like, you know, like the proteins, enzymes, cytokines. Those are what we want that goes down to your target tissue, and they all have their own signal receptors that says, oh, there it is, turn on, turn on, turn on, like that.
Gotcha. Interesting. Are there any other things that help support the effectiveness or the speed of these doing their thing, like lifestyle or diet, that you know of?
You know what's really good?
Like, can you eat caps spicy peppers and it does, or no? It has nothing to do with it.
You know, there's a lot of, I mean, I always say that, you know, anything, so you look at the mechanism of what you're trying to do. You're trying to deliver something through a skin or even the injection, right? But you're trying to deliver it into like a lot of tissue. So when you get an injection, so the way I used to teach how to do the injectables, you gotta say you get an ultrasound or a fluoroscopy and you see the syringe going down and you can guide your needle into the target tissue and then you penetrate through there and then you inject the actual stem cells, right? That was the old way. Well, now they say go parallel, be proximal, don't penetrate to the tissue, and then secrete the MSCs, the stem cells, and they'll migrate. They call it honing. It'll hone down to the damaged tissue because it signals that, hey, I need this, and they'll pull down. So there is a lot of patterns that goes in that world. But as far as, like, what you really want to think about is that it's about the actual vessels and how to dilate and how to open up, like, capillaries and, you know.
So, like, blood flow.
Blood flow. So the first thing I always think about is nitric oxide. Nitric oxide is that gas that's in our epithelium that when you engage it, it opens, it vasodilates. So, for instance, like, when you think about, like, the typical damaged tissue, it's always an avascular tissue. For instance, like, a tendon, ligament, cartilage. It doesn't, if you look at the anatomy, it only has a couple arteries that go in there. Whereas if you look at a muscle, there's a lot of, it's why it's red, right? It's got a lot of blood flow, it's got a lot of capillaries, a lot of exchange of that, you know, oxygenated, deoxygenated blood. Whereas if you look at a ligament and a tendon, you see maybe one or two little arteries, little branches here and there, and it's a white tissue, right? It doesn't look like a red, like a muscle. So because of that, it's poor accessibility for other things, because you just, not only do you need the actual, like, the stem cell to generate, you also need other, you know, building blocks, protein, amino acids, all these other things you need. You got to get those guys in here. So you think about nitric oxide. Nitric oxide is such a unique thing. It's not talked about enough. Nitric oxide is such a super thing out there so moving on to my next book, I'll talk about that. But nitric oxide is the secret weapon to do so many good things in health benefits, cardiovascular disease, diabetes, autism, dementia. I mean, this is a huge thing that's going to be so I don't understand why people don't really talk much about it. But again, going back to what your question is. So one food supplement, anything high in nitrite, right? Anything that you think about, like, you know, like greeny vegetables, spinach and stuff like that. And then you take that in and then it turns into nitric oxide, you know, and then it helps nitrites.
What about bone marrow? Because you said when they're doing stem cell injections, they're pulling it out of the bone marrow in your bones, like the traditional way of doing it. I mean,
that could be possible. I mean, it's high.
Like when we eat bone marrow, are we eating stem cells?
You're eating it's a form of stem cell. The thing with bone marrow is when you look at that, you're looking at, like, it, now it's denatured because you cooked it. It's kind of like, you know, it's kind of like, you know, you kind of, it's almost like what they call, like, apoptosis. It's kind of dead now, you know. It's not, everything's dead. Like, everything is, like, even the EVs, there's nothing active anymore. It's all dead. But the thing is that it has good proteins in there. So that's the more important thing is that.
But you're saying even if the stem cells used in the topical thing are dead, it's the signal, it's like the signal. So maybe, like, I don't know if cooking, I'm sure cooking denatures a lot of stuff. But if the things in food were all denatured from cooking, nothing, you know, would sustain us. Like, we'd have to eat all raw food, and we don't. Like,
That's the thing, is that that's why you see us age. I mean, if you really want to get really into it, bone marrow, and then just go bone marrow raw. Just suck on that.
I try to incorporate bone marrow into my diet. It's not the easiest thing or the cheapest thing, but I love it, and I try to cook it lightly. I don't beat it to death.
Yeah.
But I have eaten it raw. It's not as enjoyable as lightly cooked.
Hey, have you ever tried, like, besides bone marrow, have you done any type of other type of red meats, like anything high in its protein content?
I eat a lot of red meat, Tommy.
Okay,
it's the primary source of my, I guess, nutrition, or at least my primary protein source is probably red meat.
Okay, so I have a friend that took me down to a part of here. I live in Tampa, Florida, right? Took me down here to a little. He's from Cuba, so he took me down to a little Cuban restaurant, and they were serving horse meat.
Oh, no kidding!
Let me tell you something. You take that thing, and that thing, it's very gamey. It's very rich, very red. But you take that thing, it feels like you're going to attack the world. But you can only have that maybe once every 2 weeks. So that's what the warning he gave me.
Yeah, it's funny you say that. I mean, this is off topic, but there's something to be said, I think, from like the energetics of an animal. Like I like chicken, but I don't eat a lot of it. And I have chickens. We have chickens for eggs. But when you're around chickens, it's like they're stupid. They're crazy. They're dirty. Like, I don't know if it's the best energy. And then I like beef a lot, but even a cow, like, I think they're beautiful and could be like these majestic creatures, but they're super docile. Like, they're super chill. Like, I don't generally eat it, and sometimes I'll feel the energy of the animal. But then, like, I hunt a little bit, and if I eat wild game, you're eating, like, this remarkably, like, athletic creature that has this insane amount of power and finesse to its power that you only really see in wild animals.
Yeah.
And when you eat it, there's, like, you feel alive. Like, there's a kick that you get, and maybe it's just the nutritional density, but I think there's more to that. I think it's like the energetic signature imprint of that animal's being.
You know, you might have something. So let's break it down a little bit more. So let's say, look at a, like, I love bison. Bison is my meat. I mean, so if you look at a bison can stand still and leap 6 feet in the air. You ever seen those guys that, like,
wind over these? Oh, really? God, they're monsters. That's crazy. Oh, yeah.
They'll just walk up to a fence and they just hop over the fence. And that's why you see them walking around the streets all the time, because they just leap versus, like, a domesticated cow. They just basically just, you know, graze and they don't really care. But when you look at the muscle fibers, right? So, you know, fast twitch is type 2. You know, slow twitch aerobic is type 1, right? So slow ones, they just breathe and are oxygenated. The other ones anaerobic, right? The fast twitch are the ones that have that superpower, that bounding. But, you know, they don't have that endurance, but they have that quick burst and they're real, like, muscular. And they got that oomph, that one max rep kind of movement. Right. That's the animals that seem like, that gives you that real good, like, gusto of energy when you eat it, you know?
Interesting. I didn't know that bison move like that. Like, they look so, like, majestic and beastly to me. I mean, especially, like, you'll see those images where, I don't know, they're in, like, Wyoming or something, and they're covered in snow, and it's like, how's that thing even surviving that? And it's just, like, comfortable.
Well, that's what's great about that animal.
I didn't know that they were explosive.
Oh, yeah, that's what's great about it. So here's something funny. Bison is indigenous to Florida, the northern part of Florida by Gainesville. Yeah, they're wild out there, so that's why they're perfect.
Wild bison in Florida? I would have never guessed that.
Oh, yeah, so that's why, I mean, there's even a big ranch down in Ocala, Fort Myers area. They've got about maybe 10,000 acres, about 5,000 heads of bison, but they opened up the whole acreage and they just run through and they just basically just, like, they're roaming and stuff. So with bison, you know, what's good about that is they're domesticated here. They're not like, you know, they're like import from somewhere else. So that's why they just have such an easier, like, ability to, like, deal with this environment versus, like, a cow. You see a lot of hormones, antibiotics. You see a lot of stuff. That's why cows have to deal with that. Bison, they say it's low maintenance. These farmers are telling me, or these ranchers, because I was thinking about just, you know, getting me a little ranch and putting a little bison up there and, you know, grow it from a calf to a big one and, you know, have myself a little feast at the end. But you know how that takes, right?
They seem don't they have a lot of, I guess it's, is it hair? They look like they're pretty, they have a thickness to them. They don't look like a warm weather animal. I don't think of Florida when I think of
them. No, but that's funny. Remember, like, the way they combat cold weather is they grow that fur. So down here, they don't grow that fur.
Thick. Oh, really? So they look different.
Yeah. I mean, just that hump.
Gotcha.
The area back there.
Interesting. Huh.
Yeah, so that meat, you know, I totally agree with that. I feel that when you have that little aggressive animal you're eating, it does feel like, hey, there's something more to this than just a piece of, like, cow, you know?
Yeah, there's something to be said. I think there's just a lot in general. I mean, the same thing. We know this with plants. Like, why would it be any different? Like, there's energetic components or signatures of different plants. I mean, there's thousands of medicines that come from the plant kingdom. So, like, the fact that different plants will do different things and have different, like, biological interactions. Like, why wouldn't different animals also have different interactions?
Yeah.
So we got off tech. So I wanted to, you do have me thinking that I want to eat more bone marrow, though. And I'll look into maybe more bison and see if I notice anything. There's something you alluded to earlier that does give me a little concern. So you mentioned that the stem cells are involved anytime there's, like, growth, like rapid growth. And you said the word tumor. Like, what's in the context? Like, what if somebody has, what if somebody takes this for their tendonitis in their elbow, but they have, like, stage one breast cancer and they don't even know it? Like, is that going to make it worse? Is that,
yeah,
what's the deal with that?
Yeah, they call that a contraindicator. You know, that's why you want to go to a provider, and then they should know their patient. So regen is not really sold directly to the consumer. It goes to the actual physician, and the physician should be taking appropriate history and So from that point on, they should have an idea. So that's one of the big precursors, you know, family history of cancer, or, you know, if you think you have it, you know, get yourself checked out. But
yeah, I always wonder about that, because when you hear people that get diagnosed with cancer, it's like, it's never super early, because it's like when there's a problem. So I just wonder, like, how many people are walking around with a little bit? And I would think that there'd be some inner wisdom in the body to not just unnecessarily grow cancer just because you're treating some other injury. But I don't know how that all that works. Hey, like, this is topical. So if you put it on your elbow, it's got to go a long way to get to, well, if you have cancer in your pancreas or something.
Well, here's the thing. So once it goes through the skin, so now there's vessels in there, so it does penetrate through the artery and vein, so it goes into systemic.
So it does move systemic. So why even do you need to topically apply it to the area?
Well, it's a saturation level of that area. We'll get to that target tissue. But, you know, you have some consequences that
go
into
it. Everywhere. Yeah. Okay. So that's, for the listeners, that's definitely something to consider. So if somebody wants to try this, you guys make a product and you sell it, but it goes to providers, so they have their doctor contact you to try it? Or
yeah. What you want to do is just contact us and then just tell me your location. I think on our website we have a place where you can put your zip code in, and then it'll point to the local provider in your area. Or just contact us and we'll find a provider in your area, and then we just have a conversation with them. Or you can have them talk to their provider and they talk to us, and we just go ahead and set
So
them.
I rolled the dice a little bit. I just put it on an injury I have. So you sent me a little bit, and it's been interesting. Like, I do know what you mean by the capsaicin that's in it. Like, there was one time that I did feel it also, like, later that day reactivate from something, and, like, all of a sudden my heel got warm. I've been dealing with a little, like, heel pain. I've talked to you a little bit off air about it, but basically, I don't know if it's like plantar fasciitis, because I've always thought of that as pain being on the bottom of the foot, like where I think of the plantar fascia to be. And this has been more of like the back of the heel, but it's kind of like an area of really like dense tissue, and it's been getting better. The problem I have is I don't know. I'm doing different things, so like I'm laying off of it. I'm getting manual therapy. I'm using the special sauce you sent. So like all that together is helping. I just don't know like to what degree what component is helping. And I have a history of that, of like throwing lots of stuff at a problem. And then when it gets something helps it, I don't always know what helped it, or vice versa. Normally what I do is I throw lots of things at something and I make myself worse and I don't know what did it, because I did like three things at a time. Uh-huh. But it's very interesting. It makes sense that as we get older, we would be just generally worse at healing things. And it sounds like this is a central part of our natural healing process that's just, I guess, been downregulated because we get older. Do the stem cells have their own? I know that most cells in our body have mitochondria, but some don't. Do stem cells have their own mitochondria in them?
Yeah, they should have. Okay, so mesenchymal stem cells, yes, they do. It's just that, again, it's what we're looking for is the byproducts, so the EV. So what we have are things that are like, there's mesenchymal stem cells, but they're dead, right? They're not, they're dead. We're looking for the EVs, which is the it's acellular topocapsulated signalers, like exosomes.
Gotcha.
Yeah, they don't have that type of mitochondria on there.
Yeah, I think I've heard in the past exosomes talked about, like, there's some type of communication thing, not just between cells, but even like a way that different species will communicate, almost like viruses. Like, it's like a form of communicating to other animals in your species or even other species of, like, things that are going on in the environment. Like, are there stressors? Like, I've even heard that trees will use them to communicate through the forest of, like, predators or whatever. Like, all this stuff that we don't, that's going on, that we're not in the loop. Like, we don't see. Like, we're just scratching the surface of, like, all the dynamic systems that are, like, mushed together on planet Earth.
You know, so I was in the military. I flew in the back of a jet, and we hunted submarines. We did, like, surface ships and stuff like that. So had a good time. But one of the things that we studied was the ocean, oceanography, and sound, how it propagates through the water and stuff like that. And then what I learned there is about wavelength. You know, when you look at, like, sound wave and just wavelength itself. So when you look at wavelength, when you make it faster and you condense it down, it doesn't travel far. So when you have a long one, you know, it travels far. So when I think of a long one, I think about plants. When they have, like, it's such a long that you can't detect sound while you're in the water because it's such a long, it doesn't sound like anything. But when you bring it, when you condense it down, it seems like a hum sound. But when you bring it so long, you can't identify what that is because it kind of blends into the environment. But it's a source of either a submarine or something. But as long as but the funny thing with those long waves, it travels farther. So then I started thinking about what you're talking about, is like plants. Plants are very, like, you know, like, they communication to, it feels like maybe something in the sense of it's a long wave that we can't sense it, but they know how to receive that information in a long wavelength. So maybe there's some merit to that.
There's a lot going on we don't understand.
No, sure. No. But, you know, I'm all ears on that stuff. I love when it comes to, like, you know, hearing an idea goes, all right, let's research this, look it up, and see if there's some merit to it, you know?
Yeah, plants do weird stuff. In fact, one of the plants behind me, I don't know if it's still there, but we had a plant that was, there's like a viney plant, and it was going, and I watched it reach to this thing, like some part of, like, of another plant that was sticking out to grab onto for its, like, next, and I'm like, how does it know? Because it was really, it was like 2 feet away. So it had to go up. So obviously, you know, fight gravity. And it had to go off to the side. So it's like it knows that there's something to grab over there.
You know
what's going on there?
Wait, you go look in the forest. When you go walk in the forest and look how trees lean. You know, they're fighting for sunlight, right? They want that photosynthesis, right? They're looking for it. So they'll bend, they'll twist, they compete for that sunlight. And, you know, the most dominant one are the faster growing ones, and that's the tree that's going to be the alpha tree. And then that's what it starts dropping. That's his little seeds or his acorns, and then they plant their little babies. And that's how, I guess that's how the world works, right? The strong survives and dominates.
We have a lot of big trees around our house, and they're threatening the house. So every few years, we just have to take a couple down. And we just took a few down recently. And, you know, everything, the whole energy of, like, that side of the house has changed because these are – three of them were like 100-foot trees. Wow. One of them was probably 80 or 90. And then, like, you look at what's left there, and you're watching this, like, fresh starting line of all these plants. Like, who's going to win this new race? Now they have this huge opportunity to gather up all the sun without these big giants there. And I'm eager to watch. I mean, this is a long process. I'm eager to watch. Like, I've been looking to buy a few trees that I want to plant there, too. And it's like, the trees I like are such slow growing. It's like, I'm not going to live long enough to see this thing. I don't even know if the house will still be here when the tree matures. It's like it's their world. We're living in it.
Have you ever seen that documentary about plant growth and music?
I've seen something where they, like, put plants up to microphones and listen to them. I don't know if that's the same thing.
Okay, so they put, like, you know, classical music, gentle music on the plant, and then I think that was part of it because the secondary was sensing what they felt after hearing that music. But there, you know, put, I would do an experiment on your own. Put a little speaker on one of the plant or the trees and not one of that, and just play music, you know, and just play music and see if that, you know, just measure the tree, give it 1 year and see where it's going to be at next year.
Yeah, I'm sure it would have some effect. I mean, they do those experiments with music on, like, water and then watch how it crystallizes when they freeze it.
Yeah, that's cool.
And, I mean, plants got a bunch of water in them. All right, we really got off track there. So let me ask you, before we wrap it up, have you personally used this topical stuff for any injuries you've had? Or?
Yeah, that's the best thing about this is that I'm the best experiment. You know, from the military, playing football, college, doing everything you're supposed to do as a boy, you know, I got injuries everywhere. So my low back between L5 and S1 is basically bone on bone. If I don't move, I have neuropathy down my leg, central canal stenosis, all that classic stuff. So thank God I'm in this field, so I have a lot of therapy I do. Then the problem is that, you know, when I turn, like, right about 4 p.m. in the daytime, my low back is shot. So, you know, I would start playing around with, you know, back then with PRP, then stem cell from a low back. I'm like, okay, you know, it's doing good and stuff like that. But, you know, it's a very high cost. You know, you look at stem cell itself, it's like, places are charging between like $5,000 to $14,000 per injection. I mean, you know, thank God I have my own place. But then, you know, then I started using it on myself. And then when you use it on yourself, you can really target the area that you know that you're having ache, right? It's either on L4, L5, or L5, S1. And you can really target it. It goes, okay, I'm getting more motion. I can go more into an exercise routine. I'm lasting longer in the daytime. Good. So then I did like a little x-ray before. I haven't done my x-rays afterwards, but, you know, I try to target things that I have, you know, as we age and we're active. All right, I have a knee issue, target the knee. Achilles issue, target that. So I'm my best test subject on these things. So I really enjoy it. And the neat thing about that thermogenic effect is that that's the feeling that I want during the day. Like when it turns on, especially when you turn it on, when you apply it in the morning, and then 4 p.m. when you start, you know, thinking that you're going to slow down because of pain, the thermogenic effect kicks on and goes, oh, there it is.
What makes it kick on? Is it just movement? Or?
I think it's movement, and more importantly, it's the activity. It's like the inflammatory process starts up, so your capillaries open up, and it engages that capsaicin to turn on.
Gotcha. What are other, like, common injuries that people will use this for?
So we have really great success on cervical, arthritic, and neck pain. Any osteoarthritis issues like shoulder, low back, knees. It's like any sports medicine injury. Think about
any. My mother has a knee problem, and unfortunately, she's kind of fallen victim to the opiate crisis over it. But what they do now just sounds so bad to me. Like every, I want to say 6 months, she basically gets a shot to just like kill the nerve signals. They literally just try to kill the nerves so that she doesn't feel the pain. Like talk about the epitome of like putting a Band-Aid over.
Yeah.
I mean, they're not even asking the question of like what's causing it and what can be done so that it doesn't arise. They're just...
See, that's what sucks.
Beyond numbing it, they're like killing it.
Yeah, that's what sucks about that world. They just want the patient to quiet down. So we don't care about the cause. Let's eliminate the superficial thing, which is the pain. And who cares if they destroy it? We'll give another injection. And the worst thing about when you look at like, you know, like these nerve ablations or any type of like, you know, like, you know, how they dead the nerves or they basically do like a cortisone shot. It's an anti-inflammatory. The problem with the second one, the cortisone shot, it destroys your cartilage. So you're adding more fuel to the fire. So let's say you have a little arthritic knee. Well, you do injections, right? One, two, maybe you're okay. Some of these guys take 4 or 5 a year. And then after two, you know, they don't recommend 2 injections per year. And then they're going wacky on these things.
It destroys it. Is that just because it's a catabolic, like, hormone, yeah, essentially, that breaks down tissue?
I think so. I don't know the mechanism, but I do know that it chews down the cartilage, and then they are prone. So you look at typical like NFL players, and they're, you know, back when, you know, when I was younger, you see they all had hip replacements. Well, they got injected so many times during the season, they just got, you know, they got it up, so they chew down the cartilage real bad.
For the average person, how long should they expect to get a positive result from this, like, twice daily application thing?
Well, here's a great thing about Regen. So Regen has a component that has the anti-inflammatory component, and it has the regenerative component. So the anti-inflammatory component is that interleukin-10. So that decreases inflammation. That's majority of pain. So when you have pain, you know, let's say you have a joint, and when you have excess fluid in the joint, well, it pushes on those nerve endings, and you're like, oh, my knee feels painful. It feels unsteady because you have excess fluid. Well, it decreases inflammation. Then, as you give it time, depending on how degrading your tissues are, it may take 3-4 months, but it starts regenerating those cells. Those cells take time. It doesn't take, like, you know, 2 weeks to have your whole tissue back. It may take 3-4 months, and it may take another application of Regen to get those EVs down there to signal to other tissues out there. Because when you're looking at tissues degraded past 50%, that's a lot of rebuilding you got to go into, you know?
Gotcha. Well, you got this book, The Future of Regenerative Medicine, Unlocking the Potential of Topical Stem Cell Therapy. If people want to learn more and take a deeper dive on their own, they can get this book on your website, I assume? Or
On Amazon.
On Amazon? Okay.
Yeah. Just look it up.
And then if they want to reach out to you in your practice to see, or have their doctor do that, to see if this is like a suitable option for them, how do they do it?
You can just go on my website, regen.com, and right there, just shoot me an email, and then we'll start the conversation, and just tell me who your provider is, or have your provider just reach out to me via that website. There's a information email there.
Gotcha. Well, I appreciate you taking the time, Doc, to chat with me about this. I'm interested. I feel like I learned a lot more about what stem cells are and how they work today, and it's interesting stuff. I mean, I'm very interested to see the future of, like, how technologies help people heal. Like, the idea that you alluded to earlier, that we're going to be, like, growing parts with these things is it's scary. It's, like, kind of terrifying, but it's kind of crazy. Like, if somebody, I mean, 10 years from now, are people going to be able to just regrow their own organ if it's problematic, or a new limb or finger or whatever? Like, who knows what's on the horizon? It's going to be wild. We're living in wild times.
Yeah, it's wild times. But the fun part is that I use the theory of your knowledge is in front of you. You just have to capture it by either, you know, Googling it, chat, this podcast, something, gather information, and then take it upon yourself to, you know, get that product, get that. And that's why Regen is really accessible to you faster than, like, a pharmaceutical drug or a high-cost item, you know? So that's why I really enjoy this. It gets faster into the patient's hand.
Well, I appreciate it. I think it's exciting what you're doing. And thanks for taking the time. For the listeners out there, always grateful for your listening. If you think that this is a product that might help you out, check it out. And the website is?
www.regen.com.
Great. Well, thanks, Tommy. It's been a pleasure to speak with you. And I hope our paths cross again in the future. Have a great day,
everybody. Man. Take care.